Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Hope all of you are having a fantastic Thursday morning. And you know who's having the best Thursday morning of all? St. Louis Blues fans who won their first ever championship as a professional hockey franchise. This is what it sounded like on the Blues radio network as the final seconds ticked down.
Get up, St. Louis. Get on your feet. Raise them high. 5 seconds to go. And the time winds down. They did it! It's over! The game is over! The series is over! The wait is over! And the St. Louis Blues are the Stanley Cup champions for the first time in franchise history!
So the Blues get it done thanks to rookie goalie Jordan Binnington just playing a lights-out Game 7 road victory performance. I mean, he was phenomenal, and I'm not a hockey guy. I'm not Mr. Expert, but I do know some of the saves he made were flat out extraordinary. The road teams had a tremendous amount of success in this series. The Blues went 1-2 at home. The Boston Bruins went 1-3 at home. And a wild, zany, crazy ending to the postseason in hockey officially came to a close with a few F-bombs, which I believe we have lined up, Danny G, which we have edited because we don't want to get FCC violations ourselves. Here's what it sounded like.
You know, once we got that lead, we knew we were going to get it. You know, sorry, I'm so amped up. I'm so sorry. We knew. The boys are so
I've heard that word in hockey before.
I'm terribly sorry.
It's okay.
I apologize. But it was unbelievable. We worked so hard. I don't know what to say. It's amazing.
That's Conn Smythe winner Ryan O'Reilly dropping one of the many F-bombs that were heard after the game that led NBC have to apologize because everybody was so excited as they passed around the Stanley Cup. So St. Louis, a big win for the city of St. Louis, in particular because the St. Louis Rams left town. And so you now have the ability to celebrate still with the St. Louis Cardinals obviously having an impact in a big way in that market. But for 52 years, the Blues have never been anywhere near this pedestal. I know they made the finals a couple of times the first couple of years that they existed as a franchise. They didn't win any games there, and it was because they were competing against the original Stanley Cup finalists. So there wasn't really a Stanley Cup team. So it wasn't like there was really much of a matchup there back in the day when they made those two finals in a row. So this is a major moment of celebration for the city of St. Louis, and congratulations to that area for the big win. Eddie Garcia, what would you say as our resident hockey expert to put a bow on this year's hockey season and this year's hockey postseason?
Well, for the St. Louis Blues, obviously an incredibly resilient team, as has been mentioned many times. They were dead last in the league in early January. They call up a rookie goalie in Jordan Binnington, who was fourth on their depth chart to start the season, and he performs brilliantly. I thought Boston was the better team in the first period, but because of Jordan Binnington, he was able to keep them off the scoreboard, and then they got that huge goal late in the first period, and I mean, that was just a killer for Boston. The Bruins' power play has been fantastic all postseason, but they only had one power play opportunity, so awesome job by the Blues of playing their game, but also being smart, not making any mistakes or crossing the line with their physical play. So an amazing story for St. Louis, and great to see that original expansion franchise finally get their Stanley Cup.
To put it in perspective how crazy this was, on January 7th, the St. Louis Blues were 250-1 to win the Stanley Cup. And at least one gambler put down a little bit of money there, $250. I think he put down to win $100,000. So he refused to hedge his ticket. That is a pretty cool gambling story that has been ricocheting around the internet. So pretty wild there that how far back they were in that equation. And I think they had the worst record in the NHL just about, right after the first of the year.
Yep, so, dead last. And they made a coaching change and brought up the goalie, and the rest is history.
Dead last. I mean, the amazing amount of a run. And this kind of goes to the fun that is the NHL in general. You make the playoffs in the NHL, anything can happen. And that's not a cliche. I mean, it is wild how much variety we can get from the Tampa Bay Lightning, which seems like eons ago, who had one of the best seasons in the history of hockey, to get run in the first round in a sweep by the Columbus Blue Jackets, to the St. Louis Blues emerging and winning the championship out of nowhere, even back in early January. And as a result, they now are the champions of the world in hockey. And hockey has such a short offseason. I think that training camps officially begin for hockey in 2 weeks. So it is wild, honestly, when you look at some of the offseasons in sports, whether it's the NFL or college football for sure. It seems like hockey finishes, and then they immediately go right back into training camp with hardly any time to recover at all. But that is an amazing ending to the season for St. Louis. So congratulations to Blues fans. All right. Also going on, we might have the end of the NBA season tonight. We will find out here shortly tonight with certainly the end of an era with the Warriors, with the Oakland's Oracle Arena hosting its final game, regardless of the outcome. Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Can the Raptors close it out? Can Steph and Klay and company find a way to win their first home game in the NBA Finals and force a Game 7? And really get into the psychological state of the let's be honest, Toronto Raptors, who felt like, if you watch Game 5, they're up 6 with 3 minutes left and the ball, find a way to lose in regulation, and as a result, what is their psychological status going to be like? We're going to talk with Frank Isola here momentarily and see what he thinks. Also, other major news that is out there in the universe of the NBA as we move closer and closer to the start of free agency. Kevin Durant has officially had his surgery yesterday. If you listen to the show, you know that David Chow at Pro Football Doc said, based on the way he was watching that video, there was almost no doubt to him that Kevin Durant had torn his Achilles tendon. Well, Durant went on Instagram yesterday afternoon and said, along with posting a photo of himself from the hospital, he said, "What's good, everybody? I wanted to update you all. I did rupture my Achilles. Surgery was today, and it was a success. My road back starts now. I got my family and my loved ones by my side, and we truly appreciate all the messages and support people have sent our way. Like I said Monday, I'm hurting deeply, but I'm okay. Basketball is my biggest love, and I wanted to be out there that night because that's what I do. I wanted to help my teammates on our quest for the three-peat. It's just the way things go in this game, and I'm proud that I gave it all I physically could, and I'm proud my brothers got the W. It's going to be a journey, but I'm built for this. I'm a hooper. I know my brothers can get this game 6, and I will be cheering with Dub Nation while they do it." So, really, I would say classy Instagram post from Kevin Durant in the immediate aftermath of his surgery. Expectations are that could be a 9-month to 12-month recovery, depending on exactly how that goes. If you do the math, you know, that means maybe by mid-March-ish, Kevin Durant could be cleared to come back and start working his way back. Potentially by the postseason, he could be ready to play if he wanted to play next year. Now, if he signs with somebody like the Knicks, they won't be in the postseason at that point in time, probably. So it's possible that he does not play for the entirety of the 2019 and 20 NBA season. But we'll see how he recovers on that Achilles tendon surgery. Again, he traveled to New York City to make that happen. One story that is worth following is, there's a report out there from lots of different media, effectively, that the Kevin Durant Achilles tendon injury is not so significant in terms of the free agent market that he might find, because there are a lot of teams in the NBA that think Kevin Durant is so good, they would pay him a full 4-year contractual guarantee, even if it meant they only got him on the court for 3 years. In other words, he's so good that a 4-year guarantee is worth it, even if you only get him for three quarters of that contract. So that means that there may still be a substantial amount of drama as Kevin Durant makes his decision on where he will sign as a free agent. Other news, Kyrie Irving replaces his longtime agent as we get closer and closer to the start of NBA free agency there. And we'll see what ends up happening, obviously, with Kawhi Leonard and everybody else that is in that universe of NBA free agency. But that is the latest news in that particular arena. Couple of other news stories that are out there for those of you waking up, and this is going to be one worth following, I think, in general. The Anthony Davis drama continues. Reports last night that the Celtics and the Lakers are both making efforts to sign Anthony Davis before the NBA draft next, or sign and trade Anthony Davis, or trade for Anthony Davis, or whatever they're going to do between now and the next Thursday when the NBA draft is taking place. And the other bit of news, and this is going to be one to follow, we've wondered what the NCAA might do surrounding the pay-for-play player trials, right? All of the different schools that have found themselves under the microscope in college basketball for being alleged to have been paying players. What will end up happening there? Six schools reportedly to be notified of serious level one NCAA violations, which could lead to NCAA tournament bans. Which are those six schools? What exactly will happen? This will be a intriguing story to follow as well as we move on into the summer. But again, that report is out there also. Okay, so those are all of the major stories. We're scheduled to be joined by Frank Isola from the New York, used to be at the New York Daily News, now at The Athletic from Around the Horn. And also you can hear his show on Sirius XM. We will talk with him here next when we come out of the break. Hour two, we're going to go talk to my friend TJ Moe. He does radio in St. Louis, and he is a St. Louis Blues fan in a big way. And so we will get the perspective on that city and what that win means. That is where we are headed. That is the landscape of this show this morning. Hope all of you are having a fantastic Thursday.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
The Frank Isola, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, joining us now. He is on Twitter. You can follow him there. He is on Around the Horn. He is on Sirius XM. You can read him at The Athletic. Frank, Kevin Durant in your city right now receiving surgery for a torn Achilles tendon. Now, I know we got game six tonight, but we are close to the official silly season kicking off in the NBA as everybody makes decisions about where they might want to go. What's the latest you're hearing on the Knicks and also the Nets in terms of their pursuit of Kevin Durant? Do you think they are optimistic?
You know, when Durant also had that Jones fracture surgery, he also came to New York to have that done. So he's done this before, and it's interesting because the doctor that performed the surgery for his Achilles is Dr. Martin O'Malley, who also happens to be the Nets team physician. I think that both teams would still be interested in Kevin Durant. I think it's a big risk, especially for a team like the Knicks, who, you know, once upon a time had Allen Houston on their team. You know, he was injured. He had a huge contract, Antonio McDyess. Most recently, Amari Stoudemire. I mean, the Knicks are really, at this stage, you've been the worst team in the NBA for 18 years. You're going to sign Kevin Durant, wait for him to sit out a year, come back, be 32 years old, coming off an Achilles injury. That to me doesn't make a lot of sense, but I think they're desperate. And then for the Nets, it looks like they're going to get Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving switched agents. He's going to a Rock Nation, which, you know, has a relationship also with Kevin Durant. So maybe that's the package deal. Or Kevin Durant could maybe get a 5-year deal from the Golden State Warriors, and considering his injury, maybe he'd think, you know what, I'll take that extra year with the Warriors and I'll just go back there.
Yeah, it is intriguing. So let's talk New York for a minute here, because you had the Knicks basically clearing out all their space when they traded Kristaps Porzingis. And let's presume that it seems like, anyway, there's a good chance Kawhi's going to stay in Toronto. And let's just presume that Kevin Durant makes what I think would be probably his smartest pure financial decision, which is to sign that 5-year extension with the Golden State Warriors, considering where he is from an injury perspective, just decide to finish out most of your career with Golden State. You know, Steph's going to be there. Probably Clay, you could go ahead and sign long-term as well. And then you decide what to do with Draymond next offseason, probably, although maybe they could talk about it this offseason. And you know you're going to be on a pretty good team. You don't have to worry about anything changing as you rehab, all of those things potentially in play for Kevin Durant. What do the Knicks do if that actually ends up happening and the two top targets in free agency, Durant and Kawhi, stay put? And then you're talking about Kemba Walker, you're talking about Jimmy Butler, you're talking about, I mean, really a lot less interesting plays. Is it Anthony Davis or bust then?
Well, and that's the thing. As of right now, you're hearing that they're not involved in Anthony Davis, but I think that they'll try to do something with that. But here's what cracks me up about a guy like Anthony Davis. You go on and on about wanting to be out of New Orleans, right? You know, he wants to play for a winner. Then why is he interested in coming to the Knicks? Just say, I want to play in a big market.
Yeah.
Like, the Pelicans, first of all, the Pelicans have a better roster than the Knicks, and they're getting the number one overall pick. The Knicks have been the worst team in the NBA the last 18 years. So if you're Anthony Davis and you're trying to build this around, well, I want to leave New Orleans because I don't think I could win there, but the Knicks are a team I want to go to. Just come out and say, I'd like to live in a place like New York, a big market, and maybe I can make more money or business opportunities. I mean, that's fine if you want to say that. This idea that, like, he wants to leave New Orleans to come to New York, like, I don't know how you can be able to spin that one. But if they don't get the players that you talked about, think about it. They traded Kristaps Porzingis, a young guy. Now, granted, he was coming off of surgery, but he'll be ready at the start of this season. To get who? Kemba Walker, who's, you know, you're going to add Kemba Walker to this Knick roster. How good is that going to make you? Jimmy Butler, who's kind of a beaten up at this stage of his career, still a very good player. Can you imagine if the Knicks went and got DeMarcus Cousins? Would that be like the classic Knicks move? I think if you were the Knicks and you had Porzingis, you'd be in a pretty good position because you'd have the third overall pick plus Kristaps Porzingis coming back. That seems like more of a sure bet than what's out there right now.
Do you think, I'm curious, you spent a ton of time in New York. Is there a, you know, much like we talk about in L.A., the Clippers are clearly a pale, you know, satellite in the sky compared to the sun that is the L.A. Lakers, right? Everything yep. revolves around the Lakers. For Brooklyn, I know that the Brooklyn as a borough has surged in the last, you know, 10, 15 years. But in terms of media interest, does New York follow wherever the story is, or even when they are awful, are the Knicks, because they play in Madison Square Garden and because of their history, like the Lakers are and the Nets like the Clippers in that media market?
No, it's exactly that way. And it's unfortunate for both of those teams because they have right now the more stable ownership. They have the better front office. You know, the head coach, the same thing. They both were playoff teams. They're both doing things kind of the right way. And I think, you know, the strength of both the Lakers and the Knicks a lot of times is the weakness. It's almost like the arrogance of, well, where were the Knicks? Where are the Lakers? Everybody wants to come here. Well, look at what's happened to the Lakers, you know, the last few years with free agents not wanting to go there. And, you know, and things can turn pretty quickly. You know, all we ever hear about, you know, the Knicks, Madison Square Garden, the Mecca. If I hear Mecca basketball one more time, I'm going to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge. All right, so if everything's so great, why haven't they done anything? And that's why if you're a Laker fan, you got to be a little nervous because this whole, like, big market thing, I get it. You know, the players, because of, you know, they use it as leverage, always, like, throw out the Knicks and the Lakers. But the Knicks are now going on, you know, 18 years where they've won one playoff game. I mean, one playoff series, and the Lakers are kind of in a similar situation, six straight years. And, you know, look at, like, what the Warriors have been able to do with small market teams like San Antonio and also Oklahoma City. So you get yourself kind of in this rut. It's not exactly easy to dig yourself out. The best thing that happened to the Lakers this week, unfortunately, and you feel badly for Durant, is him getting hurt because now he won't be around next year. So if the Lakers can get Anthony Davis, and I think he's going there. I think David Griffin feels a little bit of loyalty, honestly, to LeBron James and Rich Paul. I have a funny feeling that Davis will end up there. So maybe the Lakers can turn around, but LeBron's getting up there in age as well.
So do you think Kyrie Irving will end up with the Brooklyn Nets? That seems to be where everything is pointing. You mentioned the new agent. The agent has a relationship pretty strong with the Nets. That seems to be where everything is directing itself.
Clay, he lives two towns over from me. He's in West Orange, New Jersey. I can't go a day without people telling me that they ran into Kyrie Irving, and everyone says they ask him where he's going, and he won't say anything. But a couple of times they've heard the word Nets. They seem to have the inside track, and from what I've heard, he is out there actively recruiting players. So it seems like that's where he's focused. And even though Kyrie, to me, you know, you listen to him in these interviews, and he drives you nuts because, like, during the playoffs, his interviews, he would try to convince you, I'm a great player. We already know that. I'm an intelligent guy. Yes, we know that. And that your job in the media is kind of a silly job. Yes, we all acknowledge that. We cover games and we ask silly questions. It's like every press conference, he's like, he'll drive you nuts with kind of that attitude. And you wonder how much that impacted the Celtics. That's the one thing I'd be worried about if I'm the Nets. But I think the Nets feel like we got to do something to kind of brand our organization. I think that, you know, they're obviously going to jump at the chance to get Kyrie. And he's got a lot to prove because he did not have a good run in Boston. I mean, they made Game 7 of a conference finals without him. And then he was back there this year, and they didn't even get out of the second round. So hopefully he's going to be motivated if he does sign for the Nets, because the Nets have been setting this up to kind of do things the right way.
It's one thing if the Knicks fail. It's another thing if the Knicks fail and the Nets succeed. You wake up in the morning the day after the Nets have somehow managed to sign Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, and the Knicks have been left empty-handed. The papers in New York look like what?
It's going to be pretty interesting. But the Knicks also have a way of kind of controlling certain newspapers in town. I'll give you an example. The day that the trade was made, where the Nets traded Alan Crabb, which opened up a lot of salary cap space, like the New York Post, for example, a place I used to work at many years ago, they had, you know, Knicks hopeful to get meeting with Kawhi Leonard. It was all of a sudden, it wasn't about the Nets. It was about how now the Knicks might try to get a meeting with Kawhi Leonard. It was like, let's see, we're going to have money. Kawhi Leonard's a free agent. We can get him. We all know that Kawhi Leonard is going to be a free agent. No one has linked him to the Knicks. And Kawhi Leonard is going to leave cold weather Toronto with a pretty good roster. He's in the finals to go to cold weather New York instead of L.A. Like, if Kawhi Leonard leaves, don't you think he's probably going to go home to L.A.? This would now be his third team in 3 years. I'm sorry. His third team in 13 months is not going to be the Clippers. It's going to be some other team in a cold weather city. I highly doubt that.
We're talking to Frank Isola. I liked what you had to say, I think it was, on Around the Horn yesterday, outside of the NBA universe. The U.S. women getting crushed for winning 13-0 over Thailand. And you broke it down and said something I think is probably true. It wasn't the goal scoring. It was the celebrations after the goal scoring that a lot of people had issues with. You know, it's akin to doing a choreographed dance in the end zone when your team is up 50-0 on somebody else. It's not the touchdown that you score. It's the way you celebrate the touchdown.
Absolutely. And, you know what drives you nuts, too? You know, women want you to talk about women's sports as sports. And then the minute everybody does, it becomes a gender issue. Well, you wouldn't be doing this if it were men. Like, when Jill Ellis, the coach, mentioned that, I'm thinking to myself, you don't think that we criticize men? Would you like to bring LeBron James? LeBron James, come over here for a minute. Let's discuss how you're covered. Men get killed all the time. It's like we're finally discussing sports, and it has to turn into a gender thing. That's not the case at all. I played. Both my kids played. My daughter plays Division I college soccer. I go to 50 women's soccer games a year, whether it's youth, high school, college, and pro games. So, of course, that's going to be the first thing. Well, you don't even know what you're talking about. That's great if people think that. But that's not the way you do things. And when you're a favorite and you're the defending champions and you're playing a team like Thailand, who look like they picked their goalie up on the way to the game, the poor girl was like 5 feet tall. She wasn't even trying. It was becoming embarrassing. All right, so you want to pile on because FIFA came up with these rules about goal differential. All right, knock yourself out. There's no reason to behave like that. I thought it was embarrassing for a team of that stature. And we'd be criticized. If Cristiano Ronaldo in a 12-0 game was behaving like that, Clay, I'm telling you right now, at some point, and this is the difference between men and women, in a men's game, someone is going to take a boot to either the head or the throat or the knee at some point. No one is going to stand for losing like that, and then on top of it, you're going to humiliate me by having these choreographed dances on the sideline, that was way over the top.
Yeah, and I also think it's also totally you're 100% right about the response of, oh, you wouldn't be criticizing men over this. Do they not pay attention to sports at all? I mean, an easy analogy, if you want to go back old school, right, because the U.S. women are so dominant in soccer right now because many of the other countries haven't caught up yet because, frankly, the women don't have freedoms in those countries to be able to sports like our women do. But men back in 1992, which is old school now, which is crazy to me for a lot of people out there listening to me, they weren't even alive when the Dream Team went on their run. But the Dream Team was very criticized over the way that they behaved at times during that game.
100%.
And, like, I mean, way more, because a lot more people care about the Dream Team than care back then than care about the U.S. women team against Thailand, I'm going to be honest. But I remember the U.S. men's team getting ripped over the way they were beating teams and the way they were celebrating it.
Yeah, absolutely. The game against Angola, because I looked up, it was 116-48, and – yeah, that's when Charles Barkley elbowed the guy from Angola.
Oh, it was an amazing moment, yes.
Yeah, back here, people hated originally the Dream Team. They thought, here we are being bullies. And the more I thought about it over the years, we basically helped everyone around the world get better by being like that. And maybe, you know, like the soccer team's doing this, maybe eventually, because clearly there's not 24 good teams to be in the tournament. If you're losing 13-0, you really have no business being there, so it's kind of a making a mockery of the sport. So on the one hand, you're trying to say, take us seriously as women's soccer, yet a 13-0 game tells you that there's not enough good teams yet, and maybe over time that will happen. But it just drives me crazy, and it happened with Serena Williams at the U.S. Open. It's like, we used to kill John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors when they would act like jerks. So here's Serena acting like that. And the minute people are being critical of her, it's not about that actual moment. It's, well, you wouldn't be saying this for a guy. Guys would be allowed to do that. Like, if I enjoy women's sports, I really like women's track and field. I like women's soccer. I like women's tennis. But, like, I feel like every time we talk about it, it's never about the sport and, like, the performance is happening. It always turns into a gender thing. Well, you wouldn't be saying, you want women to act a certain way? No, I really don't. I'm giving it more respect by treating it like a sport and being critical of them. This is what makes sports. Go ask the top male athletes. How did Kevin Durant get treated when he left to go to Golden State? Everyone thought it was the great. We treated him like a hero, or did a lot of people criticize him? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is interesting because I hear this all the time too. Like, and by the way, it's not just women. You hear this oftentimes when there are sports that are really outside the mainstream. For instance,
hockey guy
and soccer guy. When I talk about their sports, right? When the U.S. When the hockey's going on, and we opened with Game 7, and I'll give an opinion on Jordan Binnington, and hardcore hockey guy at some point will be like, oh, you don't even know what you're talking about, you know, or soccer guy will say the same thing, right? Like, oh, now you're going to talk about soccer because the World Cup is going on, but you have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm saying, okay, what do you want me to do? Like, because you criticize me all the time. Oh, you never talk about hockey. You never talk about, the world. You never talk about soccer. And then when I come on and I lead with hockey or soccer, that same guy immediately flips and says, oh, you don't even know what you're talking about. So you can't win with them, right? Because it's their precious thing. And so they desperately want you to like it and pay attention to it. But the minute that you say anything other than, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in the history of mankind, they immediately say, oh, well, you're treating us unfairly. I knew this was going to happen as soon as people start. And I was watching it. I had it on while we were doing it. I was like, man, these celebrations are totally over the top. And I think you said it right. If you did that in a men's sport, somebody would get taken out, right? I mean, that's kind of the unwritten rules, that if you show somebody up in a game where you're just kicking somebody's ass, the next thing that happens is somebody gets wiped out. You see it in the NBA all the time. People want to say the NBA soft, but if you go down the court and you dunk when you should be dribbling out the clock, or you're posing at the end of the game, like, you are marking yourself to get hit at some point going forward because guys don't respect that.
You're 100% right. I'm glad you brought that up about hockey and soccer. I played the sport. I still play. We get up Saturday mornings here in town, and we're out there playing 12-on-12 full field year-round. So I play the sport, and I say it all the time. The soccer media are some of the biggest snobs, and sometimes the soccer fans in this country. Like, if you want people to like the sport. Don't always act like that. And there's a lot of people that cover it. It's like their own little thing, and they don't want anyone else to come near it. They're trying to promote the sport. But once, like you said, on your show, the show that I do, the minute you bring it up, people get insulted. It's the most bizarre thing.
It really is. And I played soccer in high school growing up. I mean, to some knowledge, I mean, I feel like I know it decently, having played it. But yeah, you would think if you're not an expert in soccer analysis or you haven't watched the English Premier League for 15 years, you're not allowed to have an opinion on it at all. What do you think happens tonight in Game 6? And how important in general do you think it is? If Toronto loses Game 6, are you concerned a little bit about their psychological status if they have to go back home for Game 7, having potentially given up at least two-thirds of their lead before the title game?
Well, you know, I was up there for Game 5, and the way that they performed in the final 3:05 after Nick Nurse took the worst timeout in the history of the NBA Finals, that team was rolling. I don't know why he did that. And down the stretch, they got pretty tight. So I still think Toronto has the advantage because, you know, the NBA, a lot of times you can say who's the best player on the court, and it's been Kawhi Leonard. And, you know, Golden State still struggles to score. I mean, they did hit 12 more three-pointers than Toronto did the other night, and they only won by 1 point. I think it'll get back to Toronto. If somehow Golden State can get a lead in that fourth quarter, you know, I'll see how Toronto performs. There's a lot of guys I don't trust there, but I still think Kawhi Leonard, he's been so good this postseason. I think he'll figure out a way to win one of these last two games. But remember, too, can you imagine if the Warriors lost tonight, closing down the building, not only losing the last ever game at Oracle, but the last three games there? That's why, to me, the odd, I got to think that it's going to be a Game 7. I just can't see Golden State losing their last three home games ever at Oracle.
Outstanding stuff, as always. Go watch him on Around the Horn. Read him at The Athletic. Listen to him at SiriusXM. He's at the Frank Isola. Good stuff, my man.
Thanks, Clay.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's bring in TJ Moe. TJ, what is the vibe in the city of St. Louis this morning as you guys wake up Stanley Cup champions?
Well, nobody really went to bed, so you can't wake up. And that is the truth of it. I think Pat Maroon, who's a St. Louis guy, he is there. In recent years, St. Louis has become a hotbed for hockey players. I don't know how that happened, but 2 years ago, there were 5 first-round draft picks out of St. Louis.
Wow.
And Pat Maroon was one of the first guys to come out of here. I do a radio show with a guy, Cam Jansen, who played on the Blues. They were really kind of around the same age, one of the first guys. And Pat Maroon took about half the salary that he was offered elsewhere. He only made $1.7 million on a single-year deal here. And I think he phrased it about as well as he could have. He said, "I've never been more proud to be from St. Louis. Now let's get drunk."
The trajectory of this season, some years teams that win championships, you can see it coming, right? Like the team starts off well, they finish the season well the year before, you look at the returning talent. This team was in last place in January 7th. Is it still kind of a blur that this actually ended up happening?
Oh, it's nuts, especially when you consider what kind of season the Tampa Bay Lightning had. I know you're a gambling guy. Lightning going into the playoffs were -180 to win the Cup. It was maybe the worst value play I've ever seen. And they actually tied going back. They tied the most wins ever in a season. They had 62 wins this year, and then they got swept out of the playoffs in the first round. So it's one of those things. I mean, you go way back. This would be akin to, as a football guy, an NFL team starting 2-6, firing their coach and bringing up their practice squad quarterback, and him not working out and bringing up their second practice squad quarterback. So that's basically what happened here.
So
Mike Yeo was the head coach, and it just didn't work. I mean, he, you know, in hockey terms, they always give you points for losses, but in reality, he was 7-12. And so even when Craig Berube took over, he started out and he was like 10-12-3 or something in his first 20-something games. And then they took off. I mean, it was at the turn of the new year, 45% of the way through the season, they were in dead last and nobody could figure out. They didn't make a single addition outside of the normal roster. Jordan Binnington started the season 4th on the depth chart. In fact, either last year or 2 years ago, the American League team, the minor league team, could not find a spot for him, so they loaned him to the Boston American League team, and he played for Providence. That's how low down on the totem pole he was, and you just saw him play the game of his life to win the Stanley Cup.
That was amazing how well he played on the road, Jordan Binnington, and to come out of nowhere like he did. And by the way, it's not like the Blues, once they got to the postseason, just kind of swept through and wiped out people along the way. I mean, you guys had a couple of Game 7s before you even got to the Game 7 in this Stanley Cup Final. I mean, it's been a hell of a road once you got to the playoffs.
Well, you sort of recognize it. I watched your in Lock It In. You had a futures bet on them pretty early after the after they beat Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Like, you could see that they were a good team. They beat Winnipeg in 6, but really they shouldn't have. In Game 5 against Winnipeg, they were down 2-0 in the third period. And with 15 seconds left, Jaden Schwartz scored 11 goals in the regular season and 12 in the playoffs, which tells you a little bit about how hot he got at the right time. He scored a goal and knocked one out of the air to win the game with 15 seconds left in Game 5 and sort of took their soul. Otherwise, that one's going to a Game 7. So you beat them in 6. Dallas, Pat Maroon, who's a hometown kid, in double overtime, sneaks one past Ben Bishop, who's one of the best goalies I've ever seen, also a St. Louis kid. And then San Jose, sort of, you beat them in 6, but they were a team that were so beat up by the end. Eric Karlsson couldn't hardly walk.
And by the way, you guys came back from a 2-1 series deficit after the hand pass, right, against San Jose?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is one of those seasons where everything that could go wrong at different times went wrong, and you found a way to overcome. This is why when Tyler Bozak had the tripping call, and everybody said, all right, well, here comes the rally from Boston, the Blues just shake their head. They're like, if something was going to go wrong and actually stick, it would have happened already. It's like, at some point, you kind of believe in teams of destiny, and this is one of them. They don't have – I don't know that there's a single Hall of Famer on this team, and yet 5-on-5, this was consistently a team that you would see dominate future Hall of Famers and some of the best players in the league, the best teams in the league, for periods of, 20 minutes at a time. They'd hit them in their own zone. And I'm just, over the last 3-5 years getting into hockey, but it's a pretty amazing sport, and what you can do. It's one of the few sports where, yes, talent matters, but attitude. Craig Berube is the guy that changed it all. He played 1,000 games in the NHL just by being a tough guy and gritting it out. There was never a guaranteed spot on a roster for him one time, and he ended up playing 1,000 games.
We're talking to TJ Moe, morning radio show host in St. Louis, at TJ Moe 28. Also, big-time wide receiver playmaker for the University of Missouri during his college football career. You know the city of St. Louis well. Big part of this championship, I feel like, and I've already seen it a lot on social media, is kind of a middle finger to the Rams and Stan Kroenke for leaving the city. There's a little bit of validation, I feel like, in among St. Louis fans that you guys can still be a championship city even without an LA franchise in your town. An NFL franchise, because it moved to LA, even without that franchise in your town. Do you feel that as part of the validation of the Blues win?
Oh, totally. And some nice irony there with it being called the Stanley Cup, named after the guy. I don't know if you know, the Stan Kroenke was named after a Cardinals legend. So, it's like you go through Stan Musial. Obviously, Stan was, it's like he is the icon of St. Louis. Stan Kroenke was named after the icon of St. Louis and ripped an NFL team out of our hands. So there is some nice irony there that it's named the Stanley Cup. St. Louis has had a really rough go of things. It is a city that is not necessarily headed the right direction with a lot of the politics, the city-county divide. It causes problems. Everybody, it was international news. The Michael Brown stuff, we're coming up on the 5-year anniversary of that. We've had major issues, and because Stan Kroenke decided to light the city on fire on his way out, instead of just saying, hey, look, I can make more money in L.A., it's a business decision, he just torched St. Louis and said, this isn't a good sports market, they can't do it. And I think for Game 6, there were over 100,000 people downtown, and by the way, what is considered perhaps the murder capital of the world. So everybody's downtown, and it's, look, I go down there all the time, and I've never been shot so far. So it's not like, I don't think anybody's putting their life in danger, but you had 100,000 people downtown to watch a hockey game. I know you guys sort of felt this 2 years ago in Nashville. When a team takes over, people get into it. And St. Louis is as good a sports city as there is. Obviously, there's not the amount of people as some cities. And if you want to talk football versus in L.A. versus here, obviously there are far more people. But, man, people here still can't watch the NFL because of what was done to them because they loved it so much. And Stan Kroenke turned their back on them. So last night was a nice retribution for all of that.
We're talking to T.J. Moe. Quickly, as we one of the great things, you're talking about the city kind of getting behind everybody. There was also really awesome things that we saw here in Nashville in terms of the people who come to watch games. And one thing I thought was interesting was it's kind of an interesting play by the Kansas City Chiefs for Patrick Mahomes to be sitting in a suite coming and rooting hard for the St. Louis Blues, which to me at least seems like kind of an olive branch. I know there's been a huge rivalry for a long time between the cities of Kansas City and St. Louis, but kind of an olive branch from the Chiefs to the St. Louis community. Hey, we're going to support you, and maybe if you got to decide who to root for now in the NFL, we're still here in Missouri as well.
Yeah, I think it was smart, and that was calculated, because I guarantee you those guys don't care about hockey. And a good move for them. I mean, really, Kansas City has never, since there's never been competing teams, a lot of my friends at Mizzou, all the Kansas City side, they all said, yeah, if I like hockey, I always root for the Blues. The issue, obviously, was that we had the Rams here, and so there was that rivalry. It's interesting, if you went to Missouri, and I couldn't tell you why this was true, but if you went to Missouri, I never hated Kansas City, but Kansas City always hated St. Louis. And it sort of feels like how St. Louis is to Chicago. Like, St. Louis hates Chicago, and Chicago's like, that's cute. That's the truth of it. So I think that's sort of dissipating now when there's not a lot of competing teams. The Royals are in the AL, and I don't think they've won a game yet this year. You know, the Cardinals are a perennial World Series contender. I think that's going away to some degree, and the NFL is helping that. But that was, if you get one team to root for right now, I think the Chiefs might be a nice play.
Mizzou, by the way, you played wide receiver at Mizzou, and we're talking to T.J. Moe at T.J. Moe 28 on Twitter. He hosts morning radio in St. Louis as they are celebrating the Blues Stanley Cup championship. Mizzou is favored, I saw in early projections, in 10 of their 12 games. Now, there's still that wild story that hasn't gotten a lot of attention, which is that Mizzou is technically banned from a postseason bowl. They are appealing it. But has anybody sat around and thought about this for a minute? Because the SEC hasn't issued an official ruling on this. But Mizzou could theoretically, if they made a couple of plays, win the SEC East and not be eligible to go to Atlanta and contend for the championship. What are you hearing about Mizzou? How good do you think this team can be? Reminder to people out there who are ready for college football, Kelly Bryant, former Clemson quarterback, has transferred and will be the starting quarterback for Mizzou. What are you hearing early on about college football coming out of Columbia?
Well, Barry Odom is really, really excited. I talk to him fairly often, and he's pretty pumped. He loves Kelly Bryant, not just a player, but he's the perfect leader for this team. He's a guy that came in, was used to a winning culture down in Clemson, and has brought that to the locker room, just some confidence. As we just saw with the Blues, confidence really, really matters. So, they're pumped up about that. Now, as far as the possibility of playing in the postseason, the NCAA, while it is under appeal, they treat this like baseball does, you know, Major League Baseball, when you are appealing a game, right? If you get ejected and suspended for 3 games, while you're under appeal, you keep playing. That, I assume, is going on for football, too, because I know it went on for softball. Softball, for Mizzou this year, it was baseball, softball, and football. And softball was able to play into the postseason, even though this would have been the year that they would have had to sit out because it's all under appeal. And they think, I mean, it was kind of an unprecedented ruling. So baseball actually was really good. It was a top 25 team for most of the year, lost a couple at the end and didn't quite make it, but they would have played in the postseason as well. Now, Missouri is in a place where it sucks because the appeal could be coming down right around the time that you'd be figuring that out. But it's not also, I mean, I think it was Notre Dame a couple years ago that took 12 to 14 months to actually decide upon what the appeal was. So it's not out of the question that the appeal is still not heard until after the football season. So they're going into the year expecting to be able to play in the postseason, and they're pretty confident, dude. They they got a lot of guys coming back from what they felt was a good team last year that got some bad breaks.
Yeah, I'm excited to see. I can't wait, like many of our listeners, for football season to officially be back here. Well, my man, enjoy the celebration. I appreciate you coming on with us. It's going to be outstanding to see the city of St. Louis hoist that Stanley Cup trophy for the first time in 52 years. And I can't wait to hear all about the celebration.
It is. I don't know if you watched Alex Ovechkin celebrate yesterday.
Yeah, oh,
but
yeah.
That is going. Yeah, sorry, last year. That's going to be every Blues player. And this is going to be the one, if you can watch the parade on television, this will be the first time in history that the alumni parade will be, the alumni float will be crazier than the actual players because they've been tortured for so long.
No idea what will happen to Brett Hull on the celebration day. Good stuff.
Poor Brett.
Good stuff from TJ Moe. Follow him on Twitter at TJMoe28.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
The St. Louis Blues get a huge win for hockey fans in the city of St. Louis, and also a big win for sports fans in that market in general because they're still recovering from the St. Louis Rams moving to L.A. This is their first championship since that really happened. And it's the first ever Blues championship in 52 years. This is what it sounded like on the Blues Radio Network last night as they got the win thanks to an improbable and an incredible performance from rookie goalkeeper Jordan Binnington.
Get up, St. Louis. Get on your feet. Raise them high. 5 seconds to go. And the time winds down. They did it. It's over. The game is over. The series is over. The wait is over. And the St. Louis Blues are the Stanley Cup champions for the first time in franchise history.
Blues with an improbable run from the worst team in the NHL on January 7th to winning the Stanley Cup championship in Game 7 on the road against the Boston Bruins. I thought this thing was over when the Blues couldn't finish it off in Game 6 at home. Instead, they come back. They win on the road. I believe this means the road team went 5-2 in games in this series. So that is a huge win for the Blues. Lock It In is on, not on this weekend, Thursday and Friday as we head into the weekend, my television show on FS1 because Fox has got the U.S. Open on instead. But I did cash a futures ticket on the Blues, which is going to hopefully make me somewhat reasonable as we come down on the end of season one on Lock It In. Our final show is on July 8th, so we only have a few shows left before all is said and done with that show, and we get ready for season two. We've already been picked up for season two, so if you haven't checked out Lock It In yet, we'll be back on Monday. But big win for me there on the Blues futures ticket, which I had purchased on the show couple of months ago, I believe-ish, on that show. So big win for the Blues. Now, on top of the Blues win, we got Game 6, which is going on. We'll get to Game 6 in a moment. But first, Kevin Durant had surgery in New York City yesterday afternoon. He put out an Instagram post that said, what's good, everybody? I wanted to update you all. I did rupture my Achilles. This is beneath a picture of Durant from the hospital. Surgery was today, and it was a success. My road back starts now. I got my family and my loved ones by my side, and we truly appreciate all the messages and support people have sent our way. Like I said Monday, I'm hurting deeply, but I'm okay. Basketball is my biggest love, and I wanted to be out there that night because that's what I do. I wanted to help my teammates on our quest for the three-peat. It's just the way things go in this game. I'm proud that I gave it my all physically, and I'm proud my brothers got the W. It's going to be a journey, but I'm built for this. I'm a hooper. I know my brothers can get this Game 6, and I will be cheering with Dub Nation while they do. That is Kevin Durant after surgery to repair a ruptured Achilles tendon. And the expectation is that he will have a 9-month-ish recovery. Encourage you to go listen to yesterday's conversation with David Chow, Pro Football Doc, at Pro Football Doc on Twitter, breaking down everything confronting Kevin Durant going forward. Now, it does not seem to have substantially impacted this injury the overall interest that Kevin Durant is going to receive from teams in the postseason. Why not as free agency arrives? Well, because there are teams that are so desperate to sign talent. I'm looking at you, New York Knicks, that they don't particularly care about Kevin Durant for 1 year because they want him for 4 years. Now, the Warriors could sign him to a 5-year total deal. The Knicks are still out there. According to the offshore odds markets, the Knicks and the Warriors are even odds right now as the most likely teams to sign Kevin Durant, although I'm sure he'll talk to the Clippers and the Lakers as well as the Nets. We'll see what ends up transpiring there. In the meantime, Kyrie Irving, who will be an unrestricted free agent, has changed his agency, his agent representation a couple of weeks before free agency is officially here. The tea leave readers out there among us would say that this looks to be a good news for the Brooklyn Nets based on the relationship that his new agency will have with the Brooklyn Nets. So we'll see whether or not that ends up happening for the Brooklyn Nets as well. In the meantime, we wait on Kawhi Leonard, and we will see what Kawhi is capable of doing tonight in Game 6. Game in Oracle. Can the Warriors come back, force a Game 7 by winning the first game at home in the NBA Finals, or will they lose, in which case they will close out Oracle Arena with three straight losses in the NBA Finals. In the next game, you see the Warriors play with a as yet undetermined roster will take place actually in San Francisco. So Game 6 going on tonight. As we get ready to roll into Hour 3 here, usually we do the anonymous mailbag on Wednesdays in Hour 2, but we are going to do it here instead, 877-996-6369. You guys can load up the phone lines if you have any questions at all. I will be ready and happy to give those answers to all of your questions. But first, I want to bring in the crew, and I want to get everybody's opinion here quickly. We'll be talking about this, I'm sure, a decent amount over the next 2 weeks. But now that we know that Kevin Durant officially has a ruptured Achilles tendon, where do you make the favorite to sign him? Where do you think Kevin Durant will end up? I'll go around the horn here quickly. I believe Durant's going to sign with the Warriors. And I think the reason why he's going to sign with the Warriors is they can give him a 5-year deal. Everybody else can give him a 4-year deal. If you think you're going to miss most of next year, that means when you return to a full season, if you're Kevin Durant, you're going to be 32 years old. Why not go ahead and lock in a max contract for 5 years as opposed to 4 years, just in case you come back and you aren't as good of a player as you were before? Go ahead and guarantee yourself a max possible deal for a maximum number of years, and that'll take you up to around 36 years old. You can stay at Golden State. You know you'll have Steph there with you. Probably you're going to have Klay Thompson with you. You could wait and make sure Klay Thompson re-ups as well. Next year, Draymond Green is a free agent. But to me, that is the play that makes the most sense. By the way, should also mention there are reports out there that the never-ending will Anthony Davis leave the New Orleans Pelicans drama is continuing, and that both the Lakers and I believe it is the Lakers and the Celtics is the report that they have started to put together trade packages to potentially get Anthony Davis out of New Orleans. That is expected to be done probably by this weekend. Finally, we will have resolution on the Anthony Davis situation. But I want to start with this question here at the top of Hour 3. I believe that Kevin Durant will stay with the Warriors. What say you, Danny G?
Yeah, I thought that he was going to stay with the Warriors regardless to open up the new arena in San Francisco. So now with this setback due to the injury, he 100%, I think, is going to stay with the Warriors.
The only way I could see him leaving the Warriors is if he feels like he was misdiagnosed or mistreated or misdirected by the Warrior franchise and holds them somehow blameworthy for his injury. But based on that Instagram post, it doesn't sound like he blames anybody for what happened, just thinks it was bad luck. And we'll see. I mean, if he doesn't sign with them, I think it's crazy if he doesn't, because he's sitting out for a year. I understand the Knicks' decision. I can totally understand them saying, hey, we'll still play Kevin Durant a massive amount, a guarantee of 4 years, even though we may only get him for 3 years. But I still don't think that makes a lot of sense. Plus, if you're Durant and you want to get back, which I'm sure he does, he could be trying to think, hey, I could come back like DeMarcus Cousins did and hopefully be rounding into shape in a better way than Cousins, obviously, because Cousins injured himself by the time the postseason comes into play next year for the Warriors. And the Warriors would obviously be in the postseason regardless, whereas the Knicks aren't going to make the postseason. So you're basically acknowledging, if you sign with the Knicks, that you're sitting out for the entirety of next season. To me, having the possibility of being able to come back in the playoffs and compete for a championship, kind of hanging out there as a goal, would be intriguing to me if I were Kevin Durant working on getting back. So I think the Warriors makes the most sense. Dub, what do you think?
I'm not entirely convinced that the Warriors are going to give him the max when you think about it.
That would be an intriguing move, too. You think the Warriors might not be willing to do it?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's going to be 32 years old when he comes back. They're going to pay him until he's, 36, 37 years old, coming off an Achilles. I mean, that's a really smart, sharp franchise. And I know Kevin Durant's a great player, but you look at these Achilles injuries, and more times than not, the player does not come back to the same level. So I'm not convinced they're going to even be able to offer him a supermax, but what I am convinced of is the New York Knicks absolutely will. So I think Kevin Durant will be in New York.
What about you, Eddie Garcia? Where do you think he ends up?
I have always thought he was going to re-sign with the Warriors. I agree with you, Clay, that the only way it doesn't happen is if he has some animosity towards the organization and the medical staff over the way things were handled with his injury. I don't think that's the case, but we'll see.
Or if Dub is right and they don't actually offer him the Supermax, I think the Warriors would get crushed in the court of public opinion if they don't offer him the Supermax after he came back and played and injured himself trying to get on the court as fast as he possibly can. I think they would just get destroyed. Plus, I think they almost feel like they have an obligation. If Kevin Durant decides he doesn't want to play with the Golden State Warriors going forward, that's fine, but I think they have an obligation, to me, to offer him the Supermax. Now, it's also possible he just opts in and he doesn't want to sign a multi-year deal, but if I'm Durant, I sign a multi-year deal. Look, you never know what could happen with these surgeries, right? I mean, look at Alex Smith. We don't know if Alex Smith is ever going to return to playing football again. You have to take as much maximum money as you can, period, in my opinion. But you certainly have to do it if you are coming off of the injury that Kevin Durant will be coming off of. He'll only be a couple of weeks into his recovery when free agency hits. I would sign, if I were advising him, I would advise him to sign a five-year max deal with the Golden State Warriors, lock in whatever the math is, $160 million plus. Know that you are set there, and know that the Golden State Warriors will be pretty decent over the entirety of that deal because they've already got Steph locked up, assuming that they lock up Klay Thompson, which I think they will as well. Roberto, what do you think? Where does KD go?
Hashtag future Laker.
Yeah, that's absurd.
Yes. Future Laker with Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant will get Kyrie, then it's on.
I don't even think if you look at the there's certain teams. Like the Knicks are so bad that having Kevin Durant sit out for a season doesn't even hurt them. And in fact, it could help them because they get back into the lottery again in addition to that. Now, if they try to trade for Anthony Davis, things are a little bit different. But if they just sit on the sidelines for another year, in theory, it could just aid them in getting another high draft pick. So I think it's either the Knicks or the Warriors. I'd be stunned beyond belief, honestly, if Kevin Durant signed with any team other than the Knicks or the Warriors. I could maybe see Brooklyn, they've cleared up the space for him. But I just the Brooklyn's obviously a better team, so maybe I should just go ahead and toss them into the mix as well. But I think it's going to be the Warriors.
Before this, I thought he was going to leave to New York, but now I think he's going to end up staying in with the Warriors.
I think it's the smartest decision by far to go ahead and take the 5 years guaranteed because you just don't know how you're going to come back from that Achilles injury. And if you get a four-year deal, that's fine, but you may not be that desirable coming off that four-year deal when you're 35-ish years old. So I think it's a no-brainer.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.